listening to Not So Live from Astro G, presented in glorious Alias 3D graphics. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
And your buddy, Mike the Ghoul here, fresh with his aux cord, ready to plug in the old system. You guys ready to talk some N64?
I'm going to admit I loved this system. I know it has its haters now, and it came out up against the Sony PlayStation, and Sony was the big winner of the generation. They got Final Fantasy VII, and that pretty much cemented PlayStation as the game. Yeah. The game, the game station, the place you had to be. But fucking Christ, I loved the Nintendo 64.
I got the PlayStation. My little brother got the 64. Mm. So I played a lot of these, but I was the one that had the system, like you said, that everybody wanted.
Everyone wanted.
I had Final Fantasy VII, and that was my jam.
Yeah, so, no, I remember. Yeah. I was a Nintendo fan. I still am, but I was a Nintendo fanboy, so I didn't pick up a PlayStation until later. I got the Nintendo 64 when it was out. I earned up my hard-earned paper route money, and I went and I got it, like, in January for my birthday, and, like, had the Nintendo 64 and had one game for one fucking year, which was Super Mario 64.
Yeah.
And that game was hella fun to play. I was so good at that game a year.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm so bad at it now, but I was so good at that game.
There was some tech you would pull back in the day with those jumps and backflips and all kinds of things. And the backwards jumps. Oh, God, yeah.
Can I go backwards all the way up the slide that I just went all the way down? Yes, I can. Look at that. That was fun. That. Yeah, that was a good time.
Such broken tech in the day.
That was so good. It was so good. So we have a list from IGN this time.
Very reputable.
Well, quote unquote reputable. The top 25 Nintendo 64 games. Now, we could again go through all of them, but I feel no need to just discuss three different Pokemon Stadium games that are on this fucking list. I don't care.
Yeah.
I care about the top 10. So we're going to look at the top 10, and we're going to discuss those specifically. And number 10 is a game you have played, but I didn't, because it's a shooter and a space shooter and a planet shooter, and it's not so much for me. But Star Wars Rogue Squadron, a name I recognize, and every time they trot out and be like, hey, EA's gonna make a Rogue Squadron game, everyone's like, yay! So tell me why. Go.
This was a fun game, okay? It was a fun shooter. It was a little more, it was very much in, like, kind of the vein of Star Fox, you know? Like, it was not as clunky as the original Star Fox and everything, and a little more easier to control. They had some really cool designs on the fighters, the TIE fighters, the X-Wings, some really cool races, some cool visuals in the game. It was just fun. It was one of those games you got together with your friends after school, and you guys picked a, you know, you picked a character and you raced it for a couple hours, and that's what you did. There was a fun fact I was just reading about this game that, you know, we could talk about, that it came out around the same time as the Phantom Menace Episode 1, which is crazy to think about, that that was December 1998 or whatever it was, which is wild.
We're old.
Oh my God, yeah. But, like, the fun little Easter egg, the Naboo fighter, which was a playable ship in this game, had to be this game had to be held back so they didn't spoil that, because no one knew. We didn't have Naboo yet in the Star Wars universe, you know. We didn't have the Gungans and you know, Padme and all that. Like, it was really kind of neat to see that as a neat little Easter egg. Like, even back then, they're trying to not spoil everything. Now they just spoil everything in any trailer.
Oh, every trailer. You just go watch the stuff for Thunderbolts, you know who the villain's going to be and everything else. Or a Funko Pop comes out and it kills, like, everything that you need to know about a movie. Like, who the slasher killer? Please stop. Just let us enjoy the secrets for a little bit. But yeah, no, this is, I remember playing back in the day, not Rogue Squadron. I actually did play both X-Wing and TIE Fighter, and those were pretty fun. Those were fun games. Another game for the Nintendo 64, which was built for 3D graphics, unlike DOS at the time, and it's actually, like, doing good stuff like this. Hell yeah, I would have been all over that if I, you know, had realized this game was out.
yeah, it was a fun game to play. Definitely a good time with friends.
Wave Race 64, I'm going to be honest with you, I've played this game. I do not see the appeal of Wave Race. There are better games on Nintendo 64 than this. Yeah.
This feels like a novel. Like, this was a fun game, too. I think Rogue Squadron's a little bit of a better kind of, you know, shoot 'em up racing kind of game theory thing. But, I mean, you're on Wave Runners, which was, like, kind of cool. It's the mid-90s, so, you know, Wave Runners were kind of hype, so kind of cool. I think a game like Tropic Thunder was just a much better game with the cool boats than the Wave Runners. They were clunky. They were just kind of hard to control. It was weird.
Yeah, and it's funny to me that we have this one this far up.
Yeah,
like, don't get me wrong, the physics was interesting, the water was kind of cool to see, although it all looks really bad if you weren't, like, right on it at the cutting edge. Right. It's really It's not great looking, but is this a better game than number 14 on the list, Mario Party 3, which is unquestionably the best of the fucking Mario parties they ever put out? Really, this game? This one?
There's a couple in the teens that we can talk about that I think I would have put above this. I'm thinking this is just in here for the novelty of what it is, I
Has to be,
guess.
because it's not a good enough game in my opinion to be in the top 10. Maybe as a tech demo, sure. But not in the top 10. However, number 8, I agree with, and maybe probably would have put in my top 3, honestly. Super Smash Brothers, the original.
The one that started it all,
Yeah.
right? I mean, this is before we had 900 characters to choose from.
Yeah, it's funny because we talk about Melee, we talk about Brawl, and all the ones that have come out since was like the mega collections of characters, as you alluded to. But there was something pure and fun and simple about the original Smash Brothers that I absolutely loved. My friends and I were playing this back when the game came out, and I was living at home. I brought my Nintendo 64 with me to college, and I had four controllers for it then, and my college friends and I were just blasting it out regularly. There was one of my favorite memories was like a friend playing with his girlfriend, and I'm in the battle, and he's like, "Get them a bomb, honey," and she goes running for it, and it immediately explodes on her, and she flies off the stage. I'm like, "Well, you're gonna have a fun conversation later tonight, aren't you?"
Look, there is no love lost between opponents in Smash, okay? Like, that's just the way it is. You hang your own siblings out to dry in this game. Like, come on. The best part I want to touch on for this was like this came out and gave you like what you wanted as a kid. Like, we always thought, like, what would it be like to see Mario fight Luigi? Bowser and Mario actually getting like a fist fight. You know, we had like Mortal Kombat and these other fighting games and Streets of Rage and all that kind of stuff. This is the first time you got to really feel like characters that you grew up with playing other games fight each other. And that was super cool. And then the novelty, like I just said about Wave Race alone, feels like this one should make it higher than number eight. I agree that it's in the top 10. I love that it's here. But come on.
And it was so balanced. Like, all the characters fought well against each other. It wasn't like you're sitting there going, "Well, why would Pikachu be able to take out Link?" No. Like, if you knew what you were doing, they were equal in the mind. Now, some of the later games, like Bayonetta's, had to be banned from certain tournaments. Or, like, in other games, I do like to play Peach over Pikachu. Like, Peach is really fun in the later games. But this one had, like, just the, what, the 12, 16 characters it
I
had, the
think it
pure
was 16
balance.
maybe.
Yeah, it was perfection. I loved this game.
Everything about this game was wonderful. It was great.
Paper Mario. This is so I had a bone against this game back in the day because this was the game that we got as a quote unquote sequel to Super Mario RPG. And it isn't, but for the first few months of its development, it was called Super Mario RPG 2. And like young me couldn't let go of the fact that we got this instead of Nintendo just sucking up to Square and getting us an actual proper sequel. Because it's not the same kind of game, and I didn't like the leveling as much, and I've always kind of been against the Paper Mario games for that reason. Maybe it's dumb of me. I recognize this game is this launched a long-running series, and it's huge, and it's fun in its own right, but I like Super Mario RPG.
I never got to play this game. This was I was already, you know, I was in college. We were onto the PlayStation at this point. The 64 was home with my brother. Like, I didn't get to play this one. This is sad. This is a really cool game to look at. The visuals are fun. It's a neat idea. Like you said, they slapped the wrong label on it back in the
Back in
day
the
to kind
day,
of
when
call
they were
something it
developing it,
was, and
yeah.
you know, and that was a bit of a blunder on Nintendo's end there. But it doesn't take away from, you know, the game itself. The game was a kind of a fun game from what I saw.
Sequels have been great too. Thousand Year Door is an absolutely epic game to play. So much fun. You get that from here, and like, it's not like they've really pushed the series far beyond what the first one was. Like, it's always held true to the Paper Mario idea. So it's, yeah, like, I'm just angry at it for the fact that I didn't get the game I wanted. And I recognize this. It deserves to be on the list where it's at. Interestingly, you were talking about how you think Rogue Squadron is better than Star Fox 64. At number 6, we have Star Fox 64.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, a good game, one of the defining games from the 90s from Nintendo, you know, Star Fox, you know, it was a lot of fun on the Super Nintendo. It was just as fun on the 64. I think because for me at the time, it was, you know, the hype around Star Wars coming out. It was a more fun game for me, and I enjoyed playing that one more than Star Fox. But it's a quality game, and just as much as Rogue Squadron, in my opinion, deserves to be in a top 10 on this list. It's a fantastic game. Star Fox is great.
Oh yeah, I really loved the original Star Fox. I really wish we'd gotten
Yeah.
Star Fox 2 at the time and not in like the SNES Mini that came out later. I think
Yeah.
that would have been interesting. Star Fox 64 is a fun game, but I also think that like I've played enough times that I don't go back to it the way I do the original Star Fox. I
Very true.
don't think it's quite as good. And like everyone I know who likes Star Wars Rogue Squadron goes back to that game. There's enough replayability in it that something about Star Fox is missing. Don't be a Nintendo butt boy, guys, is what I'm saying towards like IGN. Like, come on. You don't have to shill for the company. We all get it. It's Nintendo. You can pick a game outside Nintendo. It's fine. And LucasArts. I mean, come on. LucasArts.
A little bit of a bone here maybe thrown to the red meat for the fans, but at the same time, Star Fox is great. It's iconic. Maybe we'll get a new one at some point one day. Who knows? So,
I don't know.
we'll
Just
see.
kind of run that. Unlike many of the series they've treated right, they've run that one right into the ground with really bad remakes and sequels that no one cared about. Perfect Dark at number five. So here's the thing. IGN raises some points about how it innovates and renovates and takes the basic GoldenEye 007 engine and makes it into something even better. It is effectively a sequel without the license to GoldenEye 007, which, sure, I don't debate that. However, you're trying to tell me that the game people still play to this day on the Nintendo 64, four player with great modes and so much weird multiplayer and everything, somehow GoldenEye 007 isn't as good as Perfect Dark among the people. That's a
Strange
bold claim.
because it is a
It's a
very
bold
bold
claim.
claim
Yeah, because
because I would think the opposite for sure.
who talks about Perfect Dark anymore? But you're talking about like no slaps, big head mode of GoldenEye 007. Everyone instantly knows. Like they just know. Yeah.
I know that we all have social media and we've all seen, I know I've seen it many times over the years of the guy on Instagram that's like, the guy walks in the room and he goes, "Hey, so we're coming up with this pause music for a game, but it's gonna be just for a James Bond thing, but don't go too crazy with it." And the guy's like, "How about this?" And plays it, and the pause music kicks in. 25 years later, I still get chills hearing it. Like, it is so good. It is so good.
I understand that Perfect Dark engine-wise probably like pushed the whole concept forward. And Rare was firing on all cylinders back then, and it's so good, but that blend of music and following the movie but innovating past the movie and getting obnoxious odd job in there and everything, you can't get that in Perfect Dark. You only get that in GoldenEye. It's majesty.
I mean, nothing's better than four player golden gun mode and just going at it with your buddies. Like, one shot kills, best man wins, the death matches last, it's so good. It's so good.
Sure, you can do that in Perfect Dark with a different gun, but it doesn't feel the
It
same.
doesn't feel the
It's
same.
not GoldenEye. And I think that's like, it's not rose-colored glasses because people are still playing it and people are still enjoying GoldenEye. You can get a tournament of GoldenEye going at like any marathon or convention. I was like, yeah, GoldenEye. No one's doing that for Perfect Dark, whether or not it's the better game technically.
Yeah, you can make that argument. Like you said, Rare kind of perfect. They say it in here. Perfect Dark kind of perfected what GoldenEye started, and maybe it did to a degree. But to your point, the game that people are still playing and talking about now is GoldenEye, and maybe that's the nostalgia. Maybe Perfect Dark
It's a
is
bit
the
of
better
both.
game. But I mean, I never had a problem back in the day taking a pause break to use the bathroom when replaying GoldenEye. That's all I'm gonna say right there. No one hated the pause break at the time because we all grooved to that shit.
And I don't think that Perfect Dark at 5 makes sense with GoldenEye at like 15, 60 on this list. No,
A
no, no.
little closer together,
If
maybe, I
you put
think.
both of them in the top 10, we'd be having a slightly different argument, but not. No.
I don't think
Yeah.
Perfect Dark's 10 games better than GoldenEye.
No.
I just don't.
So, Banjo-Kazooie. I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't care.
Nah, me
No.
neither. I mean, I never liked these games. I don't know. They didn't really grab me when we tried to play them, back in the day. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know. He's a character I always found annoying personally. The two of them, whatever you want to say.
I think about these games, these types of games that became very big in the late 90s and early 2000s, and they are collectathons. That's the best way to put it. Your Donkey Kong 64, Banjo-Kazooie, all the ones that came out from Mario 64, and saw, hey, collecting one type of stars was good. What if we make them collect 12? Like, Mario 64 had the collecting aspect, but you could still beat the game if you didn't collect everything. Some of these collect-a-thon games, like, if you want to get the actual true ending of Donkey Kong 64, you had to get, like, every single type of banana for all five types of characters, and it was obnoxious. And
Yeah, there's some real tricky, like, you know, hidden things in these games that like you get one shot at and everything. And like, I am a collectionist. I love playing games 100%. I love doing that same thing. Nothing frustrates me more than getting like 20 hours into a game and finding out I can't get my best score because I missed something 10 hours ago.
No,
And
exactly.
that's just how these games work sometimes.
And that's the problem I had, especially with Banjo-Kazooie. I tried playing it. I put a few hours into it. I hit this point where I'm like, my brain is shutting off because it's all collecting and I don't care. I just don't.
I don't know who the villains are in that. I don't know who. I don't really know much about the whole lore of the universe. It's
No.
never been a story
It's
that's grabbed me.
not stuck with me.
Maybe it's fun to play, but I don't know.
I mean, I even have this problem with like Final Fantasy games. Like, I know those people will be like, well, if you go and you steal from this character at this time of day over in this zone, you'll get this key item you could actually use to go beat the night. I'm like, why would I do that level of work?
Yeah,
And it's
yeah.
work. It's not a game anymore. Collectathons are work, and my brain doesn't want to do it. Do I think, to suggest another one, do I think that this game deserves to be on this list at number four over Diddy Kong Racing? Which is a fantastic evolution of the Mario Kart like formula. It's when we talk about kart racing games, Mario Kart's the one that's held up. It's the top. Mario Kart 64 was fantastic, and Nintendo's been innovating and reiterating on that ever since. But like, you can't come up with a single game that like from another company, say Konami or fucking Crash Bandicoot stuff or whatever, that is better than the Mario Kart games of the era, except Diddy Kong Racing.
Another one of those games like that has that staying power like GoldenEye. You can still get people that'll play Diddy Kong Racing, you know? You'll still get that. And it's one of those games that just kind of I has the staying power that maybe they didn't expect or you know, and you know you had to put some things on this list that just don't make a whole lot of sense, and then I guess we'll throw Banjo on here where they did.
And that's the thing. This is number four, Banjo-Kazooie. Is it the best collect-a-thon I've ever played? No. Super Mario 64 is pinnacle of that 3D platforming collecting genre for me. Always is
Definitely.
going to be. And if I want something a little more collect-y with a little less 3D, I'm going to go play, like, Yoshi's Island. I don't think at number 17, Diddy Kong Racing should be that low, nor do I think Banjo-Kazooie should be this high at number four.
Yeah, it feels strange to me, but I mean, you know, whatever, I guess.
I mean, I don't think it's a travesty, like, if they tried to say put Quest 64 at number 5 or something. That's, no. But at the same time, like, yeah. There are
I think
games.
with a list, when you have 25 games on here, you're going to have disagreement on some, and it's going to happen. And you can throw a lot of this in a blender and get them in a different order. But there are some games that you question where they are.
Oh, for sure. That is one of them, too. Like, Mario Kart 64 is at 18, which I think should have been higher. That's my favorite of the series. F-Zero X at 16 feels low. Again, Mario Party 3 at 14, that feels way low. IGN made some weird calls, but I think the top three is perhaps their weirdest call. Because at number three, we have The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, a game that has gained a cult following since its release, and has had a 3D re-release, and people are coming around to it. But this game was absolutely loathed when it came out.
Yeah, this was a very dark tone on the Zelda franchise and a black eye, I think, for many years to like you said, gain that cult following that it got 10, 15, 20 years later. And it was much more appreciated for its dark tones now than it was back in the day. I think it was just ahead of its time in the story. You can throw it here at number three. I think it's top 10 worthy. I don't know if I'd throw it this high. It's a fine game, but I mean, I get why I'm thinking they put it this high because of the way it's the expectation of the conversation you're going to have about that now than you would when it came out.
So we're gonna come back to, I want to put a pin in Majora's Mask for a second. I want to come back to it because there's a reason. You've looked at the list, you know the reason, but we're gonna come back to it. But number two is what I think, honestly, is perhaps the best Nintendo 64 game, if not second best. I might put Smash up here as well. But Super Mario 64, I think, would be in 1-2 position with Smash in the other. Those are the ones that I still go back to. Super Mario 64 is everything you want from a 3D platformer. No company understood how to make a 3D platformer before this game came out. You go look at things like Bubsy 3D or like Sonic 3D Blast, whatever. They didn't have a clue what they were doing in 3D. Nintendo just casually did it with like no input whatsoever. Miyamoto was just like, "Oh, you know what? This looks fun." And he just made a game and just shit it out into the world. And it was like, "Oh my God, this is what 3D platforming is supposed to be." And made a genre. Like, just on his own with his team, made a fucking genre. This is honestly one of the best 3D games ever of any console. Why it's not number one? Maybe you say Smash is slightly better. I don't think so, but still.
Yeah, it's this is the game, like almost in a way, I feel like, brought Nintendo back into like, why it's still relevant today. Like, everyone loves this game. My wife loves this game. There is nobody that can talk ill about Mario 64. It is quality controls, it is visually fun, it is 3D done right, to your point, because how many times do you remember playing games back in the day that were supposed to be 3D and had like this weird kind of like
Tank
geometry
control,
to it?
yeah.
It was so hard. It was like you
Bad.
had to angle the D-pad almost to get
Yeah.
it to go straight. It was just really, and like you said, Nintendo comes and shits this game out with a controller that is the most awkward thing to hold in the world.
But it
However, it is
worked.
perfect for this
It
game. It's like they made the console for this game.
Pretty
It's
much.
too
Yeah,
funny.
no, it's perfect for
Every other
this.
game sucks with that controller, except maybe GoldenEye at times, but it is perfect for what this game is.
And that is, I think, something that's very important to aspect, that weird three-prong controller thing that felt so awkward when you looked at it, and you by default wanted to hold the sides, but you had to hold the middle, and then you're suddenly going, so why is the side even on there? What is this big chunk of plastic we're doing? But it worked for Mario 64 specifically, and it felt fantastic. It was so good. But like I think there are three or four games that I would definitely put on a top of the Nintendo 64 list. Mario 64 for defining what 3D platforming should be. Smash Brothers for basically creating whole cloth the mascot fighting genre that people are still basically doing to this, like Brawlhalla and Multiversus and all those. They're still basically playing Smash Brothers with different characters.
Yeah, Smash
Like,
with different skins. That's
Smash
all
with
it
different
is.
skins, that's all it is. And then you got like Mario 64 that showed how you take the Mario Kart formula and make it 3D. You have like a couple of others that are on this, GoldenEye, that showed how you do a 3D shooter on a console, which no one thought was possible at the time. Those are your top four or five right there. Everything else on this list is beneath it. Like maybe people are playing them now and feeling like it, but at the day, to get to the point for those games, you had to get through these ones, and you couldn't have done it without it. Mario 64 should be number one, honestly. It just should.
We shit on these lists sometimes for, them almost taking the easy way out and putting their, most well-known IP at number one. Like, well, no kidding, you're gonna put that up there. That's what you're fucking known for. But this game should.
This should
This is
be.
your moment. Like, stand on your soapbox and
You
shout a
have
little
to.
bit. You
You
deserve
have
it for
to.
this one.
You don't get 3D gaming the way we have it right now without Mario 64. If Mario 64 didn't come out, if, say, Nintendo was like, "Eh, we're just gonna stop releasing games now. We did all we needed to do with the Super Nintendo." It takes 5, 8 years before you get a 3D game like Mario 64. It just this one was revolutionary. I don't even think the Zelda games that are on this list come out without Mario 64 being here, because you had to have the engine for it. So,
100%, 100%,
which
which just makes it interesting a little bit with their number one choice. I mean, I get
is,
it.
yeah, the other Zelda game of this console, Ocarina of Time, which, I'm gonna be honest with you, I hate this game.
Dirty confession, I've never played Ocarina of Time. I've seen it plenty of times and I know the
I just
horrors and everything that go into it, and I respect completely people's viewpoints on how you can even argue this game as one of the greatest games of all time, let alone greatest game on the 64. Like, I get that argument, but I don't know. Like, this just
So,
feels like one of those moments where Mario should be number one, right?
So if we look at it from the perspective of what defined a genre, there was the Zelda genre, effectively, is what Nintendo was iterating on, and they basically control that genre more or less. They had to figure out how to take that genre and make it 3D, and what they did in Ocarina of Time basically flowed forward from the series onto all the other titles that came out after. Same control, same menu system, all the basics of it. Twilight Princess and Wind Waker and fucking Skyward Sword. They, like, maybe you put some waggle in there, which really looks like I'm just on camera. It looks like I'm jerking off. But maybe you put some waggle on there. Everyone knows the hand motion, the waggle motion. And then you played with your sword. That also sounds dirty. And that was Skyward Sword. But still, the menu was the same, and the basic construction of levels and so forth was the fucking same. And you know what? It bores me to tears in the first game, and it's bored me to tears in every other game that's come out since. Because it's just not as interesting to me as the interesting grid-based flat levels of the Super Nintendo and the Game Boy and all the other Link to the Past style games that have come out since. Those ones have been more interesting to me. They have something that feels inherently Zelda. And when you look at the idea of 3D exploration collecting games where you get the item and it opens up a new area and you move on, I don't feel like Zelda does it well. I feel like Metroid Prime does it better.
No, you know what? That you, Metroid, I think, to a degree, does that better than anybody, to your point, because the limited amount of power-ups you actually have in that game, there is so much to collect in a Zelda game. I mean, you know, I've referenced it on this podcast before. We play a lot of randomizer stuff. If you play, you know, a Super Metroid randomizer, just for reference, you got maybe 20, 25 items that are any kind of important that you gotta find, you know, and you could beat the game with five. You know, but like with Ocarina, you have, I don't know, 100 items that you gotta find, and you need half of those to beat the game.
Yeah, we
Like,
watched
it's tedious, tedious.
the Majora's Mask randomizer was at Speed Gaming Live last year. And I was watching, and their menu of like all the masks and all the things you have to collect in that game just to get through the game. Like, not, you know, make it through one or two dungeons. These are all key items that you have to beat the end of the game. It's ridiculous. And that randomizer casually takes like 6 hours to beat. A race of it is 3.5 hours. I'm like, who has this kind of time on their hands? That's ridiculous.
It's a lot, and like I said, I completely appreciate what this game is. I respect it. I think that it has its place in the discussion of greatest games of all time. I get what it did to save a franchise and save a lot of things, but I mean, I it's almost like it's too much sometimes to put this number one in some instances.
I wish this game had been good without being as celebrated as it is. Because I think if it had, like, instead of being like S tier, like most people consider it, if it was a B tier Zelda that showed the potential for 3D, Nintendo would have kept innovating on it, and we would have gotten maybe something like Breath of the Wild a generation or two earlier. But this game was so huge, and people loved it so much that when they did a sequel, Majora's Mask, they basically made the same game, but with like a weird time structure and with masks. And then they did Wind Waker, which was this game, but on an ocean with a little dingle that you swing around. And then they did Twilight Princess, which was this game, but sometimes you're a lycanthrope. Like, it was the same fucking game for like 15 fucking years. I was so bored of it. And I don't need two of these on the list right next to each other.
And I mean, in a way, like they're almost one big game, and you can make that argument, you know, one is the sequel to the other, and it's true, and it makes a lot of sense. The timeline for Zelda is very convoluted to begin with, and very rarely do you get like a from A to B to C cohesion. You get that with these two games, so maybe that also leads to why they are so high on the list. You know, we got that again really recently with Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and you sort of kind of get that with, you know, the original Zelda and the Adventure of Link, kind of. But like, you know, the timeline is so fractured and splintered and split all over the place that like I just have to feel that because you got two amazing games worth of content here is why they felt compelled to put them so high. But it's just it's an easy way out again. You know, take a chance. You know, stand on your soapbox. Like I said, say Mario is your best fucking game, because as good as this is, Mario is your best fucking game on this console.
I'd put Ocarina around number 5. I'd dump Majora's Mask just because it was hated at the time, and even if it did some interesting things, not everyone plays it. I'd put that down maybe towards like 15. Acknowledge that it has a place. Don't put it quite so high. I have other titles I would rather have on this. Mario Party 3, Smash Brothers, GoldenEye, Mario 64, Mario Kart 64. Those are my, not in that specific order, but those are my top five.
Yeah, I mean, you can even put Mortal Kombat 64 up there if you want to talk fighting games, too. Yeah. Which doesn't even sniff
here. We had, Mortal Kombat 2 on the Genesis list, and then, like, Mortal Kombat 64 here was, I think it was, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, but with some twists to it. No, I totally get you. One of the best Mortal Kombat iterations of that generation for Mortal Kombat 3 on the Nintendo 64 with some 3D-ish graphics. Like, yeah, no, I get what you're laying down. I agree with that. This is... Yeah, no, I hard disagree with some of the choices on this list. Like, maybe the games they picked, but certainly not in the order they picked. Like, there are some games on here I think people love, like Turok or Blast Core, that didn't even make their list. I'm like, this is your 25 best and you don't have Turok? Really?
Yeah, and I don't know. Really? I don't know. That was another one of those pretty revolutionary games back in the day. And I remember loving to play that. Yeah. So.
And if you're like, we can't have Turok in the top five because GoldenEye's there, sure. But to not have Turok and then to put Perfect Dark in the top 10, come on.
Yeah, there's just a lot of questionable choices here. Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
IGN, hard disagree this time.
I was saying, you know, a reputable, you know, place in the beginning, and that doesn't take away from IGN. They do some great work, but this list, not the biggest fan of this one.
This was a bad list. I would agree with that, but good for content for us to bitch about. I do love my bitching.
Yep.
This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, blowing onto the console because cartridges are so hard to deal with. I'm Eros Mike Finkelstein.
And your buddy Mike the Ghoul, at least buy me a drink next time before you do that, all right, bud?
Dirty. We will see you all next time.